Good evening, Mort. This is Earl.
Hello, Earl.
I just started the program as a Lone Ranger. And for my question, since you want me to get right to it here, there is some background that I don't know if you're going to need, but I've tried to find a way to implement the beginnings of the program, but I'm really not sure on how to go about this with some of the items like touch charges and date night, et cetera, with someone like my wife who is so resolved and decisive about her position of not being cooperative. Now, and when I say not cooperative, it's not like some of the things that you explain. She's completely removed herself emotionally from me and the marriage and is extremely resistant to any touch or conversation and tells me, basically, I don't want to do that because I don't want to give you any hope of resurrecting the marriage or trying to reconcile.
Okay. So your question is a gigantic question, and over the course of the entire program, you're going to get lots of different pieces of the answer to your question. I could speak for the entire hour and a half just on this question, but I'm not going to do that, Earl. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to sort of pick on a couple of pieces of your question, and I'm going to give you a start. Okay, I'm going to offer a couple things that I think will be helpful to you and to others. And the kind of situation you're dealing with is very common. There are many people in the program dealing with this kind of situation. So the first thing is you mentioned something very important, which many of you are dealing with, which is that not only is your spouse obstinate, but she doesn't want you to do certain things. You're asking, like, why would I do these things, or how do I do these things if my wife doesn't want me to do them? So let me put it to you this way. It's going to sound a little funny, but let me say it and then I'll explain. I don't really care what your wife wants. In other words, I know what she wants. If you're in the Lone Ranger track and she's an obstinate spouse, so her plan is something very different than yours. Her agenda is very different than your agenda. And so you shouldn't be looking at this like, what can I do what can I do now that my wife wants me to do? Because what she wants you to do is leave her alone. What she wants you to do is file for divorce, or what she wants you to do is give up like she's given up. In other words, if you're in the Lone Ranger track dealing with an obstinate spouse, don't expect my advice to be in line with the advice you would get from your husband or wife. Don't expect me to be giving you advice that is consistent with things that your husband or wife wants you to do. And don't think that I'm giving you that advice because I think that your husband or wife wants you to do those things. In fact, on the contrary, I know that your husband or wife doesn't want you to do those things. The basis for my advice is not whether or not your husband or wife wants you to do them and whether or not it's going to satisfy them today. Basis for my advice is, what is the long-term impact of doing these things on your marital situation? In other words, you've hired me to help you achieve a certain objective, and my job is to keep my eye on the target and to help you keep your eye on the target. Now, it's much harder for you to do that than me because you're emotionally involved and you don't have, you know, the experience of dealing with thousands of these situations. I'm not emotionally involved, and I know how these things unfold. I've seen it thousands of times. So while I understand, you know, you're very confused by your wife not wanting you to do these things, it's easy for me to say, and I'm saying it because I'm trying to orient you, it's not important right now. You shouldn't expect to be doing what your wife wants you to do, because if you do what she wants you to do, you're going to end up divorced for sure, because what she wants is to be divorced. for example. I mean, I don't know, Ernie, if that's literally true in your case, but you get the idea. Sorry, I called you Ernie, Earl. My apologies. So, you know, what she wants you to do is to leave her alone, is to have a disconnected marriage, is to live as roommates, to get divorced, whatever the case may be. And so if you comply with her will, you're not going to achieve what you want to achieve. And so you have to appreciate from the get-go that you shouldn't be looking to do what will be compliant with your husband or wife's wishes right now. You should be looking to do what will help you reconcile your marriage, what will be effective in the long term. And the kinds of things that you mentioned, like, for example, you mentioned two things. I'm going to address them also. You mentioned, I mean, there's hundreds of recommendations in the program. You mentioned touch charges. I think you mentioned talk charges also, and you mentioned a date night. Okay, I'm going to address each of them specifically in a second. But these are the kinds of things, employing these principles and practices, I'm telling you from experience, are the kinds of things that turn a marriage around, that create a connection, that begin to warm the environment and have a chance of softening your wife. Now, she's not going to want you to do it, but that doesn't mean that it won't work. I mean, let me take the opportunity to make a very related point. How your wife, Earl, feels about you and how she feels about the marriage is not a matter of choice. People don't decide how they feel about somebody. They just feel. Think about it. Think about how you feel about me, about your friend, about your mother, your brother, or your husband or wife. You don't make a decision. There's not an analysis. It's not a calculation. How you feel about somebody, it's natural. It's spontaneous. It's impulsive. It's a reaction to your interaction with them. So right now, it could be that their reaction to you is very negative. It could be that their reaction to you as a result of the history of the marriage is that they want out. But that doesn't mean that that's going to be their reaction to you next week or next month or 3 months from now. How they react to you a month from now will be a function, much more a function, of how you engage them over the next month than it will be based on the history or the longer history of the relationship. So in other words, it's not like somebody makes a decision about how they feel about you. They're just having an experience about how they feel about you, and your job is to behave in ways differently, to behave in different ways going forward that has a chance of influencing their reaction to you. That's one of the reasons why very often what they really want is for you to do nothing, because they don't want to take the chance that they might in the future feel differently than they feel now, because they've reached the point in many of your cases, and it sounds like it's the case with Earl, where they've been feeling a certain thing as a result of that reaction to you, and that feeling has translated into a decision not to feel for you. They don't decide that, but they can translate that feeling into a decision to move out, a decision to divorce, a decision to have an affair, whatever the case may be. So the movement goes from the heart to the head, right? In other words, the decisions that people make in the context of a relationship are kind of based on what they're feeling. We're getting into so many different things. You see, I start answering one question, and it really touches on so many different things. Like, what I was just thinking of is that this is why it's so important not to try to convince your spouse of anything. This is why it's so important to understand that marriages change not because of anything you will say. You're never going to talk your way out of something you behaved yourself into. Marriages don't change because of anything you say. Marriages change because people change. Marriage is changed not because of what you say, but because of what you do. Because how you behave, the choices you make, that has the chance of influencing how a person feels about you, which then has a chance of influencing the decisions they've made about you in the marriage. Too often, those of you in broken marital situations that are desperate, you don't go for the heart, you go for the head. Meaning that you want to try to talk them out of it. It never works. The source of the decision, so to speak, or the basis of the choice is not the head, it's the heart. And when you talk to somebody or when you write a letter to somebody, right, that's the other thing people do as soon as they find out their marriage is in a desperate situation. Somehow the instinct, the first impulse is to sit down at the computer and write this 15-page letter, right? Most of you have probably already done that already. If you haven't, don't do it. If you have done it, don't do it again. There's only one exception. That's the apology letter. That's a different discussion. But otherwise, don't do it. It never works, ever. Ever. Been doing this a long time and dealt with thousands of situations. I can honestly tell you that I have never seen a marriage turn around because of a letter that somebody wrote to somebody or because of a conversation that a husband and wife had. Never. Marriages don't change because of what people say. They change because of what people do. And that's because when you do, you have a chance of influencing the way a person feels about you, and their choices ultimately are really influenced and determined by how they feel. And it's all connected, right? My wife always says that. It's all connected, and it's really true. All of these things are so interrelated, it just brings me to another really important point. I don't mind sticking with Earl's question here for a little while because everything I'm describing here is so crucial to every one of your situations. The point that I just got to was, that I want to explain, is that no matter what your husband or wife is feeling, thinking, or deciding, it's important that you not make the mistake of interpreting it as final or permanent. Your husband or wife's thoughts, feelings, and decisions, they're not a piece of molded plastic off the assembly line. Molded plastic off the assembly line, that's it. It's fixed, it's final, it's done, that's the way it's going to be for 1,000 years. But a thought, a feeling, a decision, those are things that are inherently temporary. They're not fixed, they're in a constant state of flux. For everybody, I'm not describing here your husband or your wife, I'm talking about human nature, all of us. They are inherently in a state of flux, constantly being renewed within a context, right? We all feel that the sun is going to come up tomorrow morning. That's because of the context in which we have lived for the last number of years, right? You all have a certain feeling toward your mother, your brother, or your friend, or your work. Now, right now, it feels to you final. It feels fixed. It feels like that's it. And you could probably put together a strong case that it's not going to change. But then again, if you've lived long enough, you have also experienced many instances where things like that do change. The context in which you're feeling or experiencing or deciding something somehow changes. And then your feelings and decisions change about them too. And yes, this is true even for your wife and even for your husband. Yours. You know, the most stubborn husband that you've ever met, the most stubborn wife on the face of the planet, yours. It's true for yours too. Right? I'm being kind of funny here because everybody thinks that their husband or their wife is the most stubborn. Right? But it's true even for yours. By the way, I can prove it to you. Because your husband, your wife, many years ago, you stood at the altar, and they decided, and it was final. You were the one, and everything was going to be great, and nothing was ever going to happen. Well, they changed their mind, and they can change their mind again. Please don't fall into the trap of, and don't let your husband or wife convince you that despite the conviction with which they express themselves, don't let them convince you that it's final. It may sound final. And I, by the way, I'm not challenging the authenticity of what they're expressing. In other words, I believe them. I believe them that today, on November 9th, 2011, they feel exactly as they're describing. I believe them, and I believe you. But it's not final. It's just the way it is today. It could change. And your job is to behave in ways that influence the context of in which those feelings are occurring, that being the relationship. They're not going to want you to do that, because they're going to want you to behave in a way that is, that sort of keeps their decision intact. Once people make decisions, you know, once they become invested in a certain position, they like to stick with it. You know, people like stability, constancy. They don't like to change their mind. You know, we don't like uncertainty. We like when things feel final. And so they're not going to want you to do it. But that doesn't mean that it won't work. And so therefore, you should do it nonetheless. Now let's get to some of the details. So how would you do that? We're just going to take one example here because I want to get to other people, Earl. And we'll have much more time to talk about more of this. Let's just take one example. Like you mentioned the touch charges. So look, for those of you dealing with an obstinate spouse, here's the story. There's two types of physical affection. One is the type that requires cooperation, participation, or reciprocation. Like, for example, a hug, or a kiss on the lips, or holding hands. If you think about it, you really can't do those things without the other person's participation. And so if you're dealing with an obstinate spouse, like it sounds like Earl is, you want to avoid that type of physical affection because you're going to get rejected. It's going to be uncomfortable. And there's just no reason to try to do that when you have the following option. The second type of physical affection is the type of that does not require your husband or wife's participation, cooperation, or reciprocation. For example, let's say your spouse is sitting on the couch, you walk behind the couch, you gently drop your hand on their shoulder for just a moment as you walk by, and then you pick it up, you know, as you walk by. You didn't have to ask for their permission. They didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to cooperate, participate, or reciprocate. It was you had the ability there to unilaterally make a small gesture a physical affection that had this chance to create a slight connection. And you can do that, like, once again, unilaterally. And as the program goes on, I will demonstrate to you how all of these things that I'm recommending, while it's nice and advantageous to have your spouse's participation, it's not required. And you can employ them unilaterally, and it's important that you do in order to make progress and inspire your spouse to begin to reciprocate.